Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
On October 1st, we're giving away a custom-shaped Pat Rawson surfboard. One lucky listener will win it, and you'll only be responsible for shipping costs, if any. He'll shape it in either San Diego or Hawaii, depending on where the winner is. So if you live in one of those regions, there will be no shipping costs. Anyway, we do these surfboard giveaways every other month as a thank you to listeners who make a financial contribution to this show. You can do that at surfsplendorpodcast.com/donate. Any amount will enter you to win. Most people have it set up as a $5 recurring monthly donation. And then also, this month is sponsored by our longtime partner, Spy. So you can use our promo code podcast on their website, spyoptic.com, and that'll earn you an additional entry to win the board. So for the first time ever, you can double your chances of winning. Spyoptic.com, promo code podcast. Thank you, Spy. Thank you, Pat Rawson. And then, of course, thank you to you listeners for helping all of this to happen. Today's episode is with one of the world's leading experts on the channel bottom, Dale Wilson. As you'll hear Dale acknowledge, he credits his experience and actually his career to Alan Byrne, or AB is how you'll most hear Dale refer to him. So before we get into Dale Wilson, here's a brief history on Al Byrne. An eight-time national champ in New Zealand in the 60s and 70s, Byrne moved to Hawaii in the early 70s to build surfboards for various labels. After watching a live broadcast on television for the Apollo 17 moon landing, he decided that he wanted to become an astronaut, so he moved back to New Zealand. And within 2 years, he was an officer flying jets in the Royal New Zealand Air Force. In the mid-80s, he moved to Queensland, Australia, and returned to board making, founding his label Burning Spears, which became synonymous with his fighter jet-inspired, deeply hewn, six-channel bottom feature, designed to increase both speed and traction. He built surfboards for Wayne Bartholomew, Gary Elkerton, and many other icons, but was equally respected for his own surfing prowess. At age 32, he finished runner-up to Simon Anderson at the Pipe Masters in 1981. And then very tragically, on August 8th, 2013, at the age of 62, Alan Byrne died due to complications following a motorcycle crash in Bali, something that Dale also speaks of in this conversation. This episode was recorded in early March 2019 in my hotel room overlooking Greenmount in Queensland, Australia. Thank you to Shapers Manufacturing Co. for facilitating all of this. And without further ado, my name is David Scales for Surf Splendor. I hope that you enjoy my conversation with channel bottom guru, shaper, laminator, and surfer, Dale Wilson.
Channel Bottom Board on Instagram, the top three comments are always about, oh, I'd hate to be that laminator, or I'd hate to be that sander. It's like the oldest joke book at this point, you know, but I still see it every time. Yeah,
it's a funny one. That's all I do. I've done all my life.
You're the guy that they all feel sad for.
Yeah, yeah. And I shape glass and sand. So I do everything. And I laugh at that comment. And occasionally I'll put up posts and people go, oh, poor sand. I go, yeah, he hates it. But, you know, because they just don't know I do it, you know. So it's funny, that one. But for me personally, I have no issues with them. And the reason I do everything, it's different when AB and myself were a team. I had more time to, you know, we were doing about 10 a week, but since AB passed, it's very hard to get guys who are qualified, not if qualified's a word, or are good trades and don't complain about a channel bottom. So I end up just doing it all myself, and if every stage is as clean and perfect, the next stage is easy, you know. And so really at the end of the day, they're not that hard, you know.
Really?
If every stage is done right. A lot of our design is based on glassing, you know, so they glass well, they glass easy. So, you know, I glass quite a few guys different channels because I'm a glassing company as well. And that's originally what I always was. And you know, I sit there and you'll tell them, oh, just make this fly a little bit more angled. There's nothing really to the actual design of the board or how the water's going to flow, but makes the glassing 10 times easier.
Mm.
You won't, and the board 10 times stronger. You know, you always see, you know, a badly produced channel crack up the channels because the boards twist quite a bit because there's sort of so much foam taken out of those channels, they twist and they crack. So if you don't get those flies right, you can't wrap the glass properly. So then, the board's just going to fall apart. You know?
Dave Parmenter was telling me once that he sends his boards to a glasser, to the Waterman's Guild, and he was telling me that he will intentionally undershape or overshape a board. Like if he wants a hard edge, he'll actually leave it soft because he knows that the laminator will actually make it super hard, and then that the sander will come down and bring it down to the right level.
Yeah. And I personally think every shaper should sand their own boards. It used to be when I started making boards or came to this country, every shaper sanded. You know, so yeah, it wasn't mass production, you know, especially us, we were always channel bottoms, you know, but every shaper I know back in those old guys, they all sanded, and that was purely for that reason. Sanding, you know, that's the fine tuning of the board, and not enough credit goes to sanders. You know, it's always about the shaper, never about glassing or sanders, and sanders are, you know, the other guys on the sanders.
Of course. Well, no, that was actually in my notes, was I was going to ask how you feel about the laminator and the sander and everybody in between being overshadowed by the shaper. I mean, based on that comment alone from Dave, you realize the shaper is actually not the least important, but they're all equally important.
Yeah.
And in the end, there's nobody's name on the board other than the shaper.
Exactly.
Some glass houses put a laminator on. But
see, I actually had this conversation today with a guy because I've been glassing at Hot Stuff originally when I first moved over in which chain and we were burning spears now, and I've never put a glassing sticker on my boards. And someone said to me, you know, you should get a glassing sticker. So, well, I've never thought of getting one, you know. But to me, it's a team of guys or girls that produce a board at the end. And yeah, it always has the shaper's name on it. But those, even down to the guy who puts the fin plugs in, is probably, you know, one of the most important jobs as well, you know. You have fins all out of action. Like when I'm really busy, I'll get guys to help me, and I'll be checking their fins, and I'll be doing. And but that's just me personally, mm-hmm. just because I'm a hands-on board maker, you know. But honestly, not enough credit goes to everybody in that factory, down to the guys sweeping the floors, which doesn't really happen. But
you know. Isn't that where everybody starts?
Yeah, well, used to, but the problem what I see with our industry is. It's so easy to be a shaper and get your boards glassed elsewhere that people just go, I'll come up with a decal and then I'll get a computer cut and I'll shape it, give it to a glassing company, bang, I've got a board. And, you know, for you and me, you would look at it and go, well, that's a professionally made board.
Mm-hmm.
The guy's only shaped 10 boards in his life, you know, and so those guys won't go to a factory and go, oh, can I sweep the floors, can I do some dings, you know.
Right.
Right. And so those guys aren't coming through. So at the moment, especially on the Gold Coast, it's so hard to find laminators and sanders, you know.
It's the case in California too.
Yeah, there you go.
There's nobody backfilling.
Yeah.
You know, there's no program set up for apprenticeship or anything like that. I feel like it's somewhat of a intimidating environment for a kid to walk into to learn, and his mom's probably going to tell him it's too toxic or something, you know?
Yeah.
And then it's notoriously low paying. A lot of factories don't pay fairly.
It's funny with Alan Byrne, you know, we had to raise so much money for him to even to try and get his body back from Bali, you know? And to me, I rate it, I'm biased because I've always worked with him, but I rated him as the top level of shaping and surfboard design, and he had no money.
It's crazy.
Exactly. So really, at the end of the day, it shows you people don't understand that we do it for the love, you know, and it's cliche saying that you do it for the love of the job, but why would you, if we were builders or something, we'd be killing it.
Oh, yeah.
You know? So, but we love making boards. We can go surfing anywhere in the world, whenever we want, really.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it comes down to, is paying for those surf trips or, you know, spending time with your family. And really, that's to me, my life. Everybody that says, I'll get out of the industry, they go for a year and they're back. You know.
Why do they come back?
Because they do the 9-to-5 and just go, I can't do that.
Because there's no love in that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And there's obviously, there'll be exceptions to that rule, but there'll be, you know, it's such a good job. You know, just the love you give people, you know, as in they'll, you know, you make a guy bored, especially I find with the channels, guys that never ridden a channel, and go, just give it some time, and then they'll come back from a surf trip or something and just be, they won't shut up, you know, and send you all these photos, and they, you can't buy that, you know, just that enjoyment you give people, you know, that's the best.
We'll get into channel bottoms. I want to learn everything about them possible, and listeners actually send notes all the time kind of asking for more detailed, super nerdy technical information. So I'll let you provide it. But before we do, I was curious if you could tell me about the first time you met Alan Byrne.
I was lucky enough where I made boards in Christchurch, New Zealand, which if anybody knows is cold. There's no surf. There is surf, but, you know, it's not like here. And so my dream was finish school and come here and make surfboards, you know. So I jumped on a plane and I got in onto the Gold Coast and I bought a car, like a shit box, and paid my bond for a unit, and I had no money. That was everything. I had 5 surfboards. I was I better get a job, you know, first day. And
what year was this?
This was 95.
And who were the surfboard shapers at the time that you venerated and looked up to when you were coming here? Did you have an idea for?
I'd always go and see Nev at the time had a shop in Mermaid, and it had a glass booth, like a glass window.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd go there, come over on holiday, and just because my dream was to shape, and I'd go and watch Nev shape boards. I'd, oh, I want to do that, you know. So, you know, at that time, I'd probably come over here and, yeah, want to sort of be in that, because up that end, is it's the big smoke, you know. There's, like at the time, I think Nev was doing, you know, all the team riders and that, they had the funding. And then what I did was just walk around Currumbin, and luckily I walked into a guy, Chook, where Shapers are, that used to be a farmhouse, and that the guy made boards from there, and he said, oh, Paul Hallis from Hot Stuff needs a sander. And so when, and I'd heard of Hot Stuff, you know, just purely because of the name and through Rabbit, and then to walk into the factory, and I was like, oh, right, this is, you know, probably top end, and I was like, oh, yeah, this is great. And then H asked me to start that day, actually, so I was honestly, it's like, yeah, I'm do whatever you want, you know, and he goes, well, I need a sander. And then at the time, Al was at Fun Zone, which is in Tweed Heads, and Hot Stuff was a glassing company as well, and so he was glassing Al. So we'd gone down there, I think, that next week, I think, to pick up some boards, and I'd always, you know, grown up in New Zealand, AB was the legend of surfing, you know, and really still is, you know.
There's, is he?
You know, like, just to be at that level, you know, through surfboards and his own surfing. And, yeah, so that first time I met him, he was the nicest guy I'd ever met, and he wanted to know more about me coming from Christchurch than, you know, talking about him or the boards that we were going to glass. And I sort of walked out of that, out of his bay with H, and just going, oh, that guy's really cool, you know. And South Island and North, I'm from the South Island of New Zealand, are two totally different countries, you know.
Really?
Yeah, it's just, so I'd never met anybody really from the North Island. It sounds weird, but it's sort of true, being from the South Island. And I was going, wow, this guy's a legend, and he's so nice, you know. And then over time, as we made the boards, I figured I'd met all these guys like Rabbit and H and that, and they were all just the coolest guys, you know, and so nice. And that's where I went, you know, to me as a grommet, I was 20 or something at the time, these guys are so high up in surfing, but they changed my thinking of so-called legends, you know. Just, these guys are normal, you know, they're good, normal people, you know, rather than go, wow. I mean, obviously, I was always starstruck by guys, but, you know, at the end of the day, it's, yeah, they sort of, yeah, it was all about making surfboards, really, making the best surfboards. So, which I think that's, we all knew, you know, everybody knows, you meet a guy that makes boards, you know, you can talk for hours, you know, even if you have totally different sort of outlooks on design and stuff, it's, you know, little problems that people go through, you know, like just resin types and stuff like that.
So you meet Al, and had you been riding channel bottoms at the time? What was your exposure?
I'd never, at the time, I was riding my own boards, but I was sort of heavily influenced by a guy called Ralph Blake, who's Kiwi shaped town and country. A lot of my theory came from his, because his boards just went so well. And so when I came here, the boards were totally different, you know, because going into Hot Stuff, and it was all channel bottoms, all polished, all glass on fins, you know, everything. I was just, wow, these things are amazing, you know. And so I got on one, and I'll never forget, it took me about at least 3 weeks, and I was surfing out the front at Tugan with AB, and I just said to him, you're kidding if you think these things work, you know. And he looked at me with a smile. He always had the smile, and he goes, you'll click. And I was just, oh, yeah, just, well, you're kidding yourself, you know. And then it was about a week later, I just found the sweet spot, and sort of worked it out and haven't ridden a concave since. You know, every time I get on a concave, it's like, nah.
So you had been riding the board for a week before it really clicked.
Yeah, pretty much. What I was feeling was on my back end, I couldn't, you know, you're on a normal board, you get up and you could go and just do a real nice turn and go off. In the channel, it really, to the best way to describe it, you have to sort of engage the channel. So you, the easiest way is to do a quick turn before you do even your bottom turn. You can just go up and down and it engages everything. And that, and then the thing's going 100 miles an hour and you're off. And that's what I think I was trying to push it too hard and instead of letting the board do the work. And then, yeah, that it's so hard to describe, but I think that's the thing. And every guy that I that say, oh, just it does this, it does that, just give it time and just work your feet out a bit. Because I think with the channel, the sweet spot on the board's a lot smaller too, so dialing in your dimensions are really critical, you know, so especially width, you know, so getting your width right is, to me, probably the biggest thing. You can have a 6.0 to a 6.8, but if the width is a quarter inch out, it's, you're not, you'll struggle with it, you know, within, you know, reason, but you'll find it's, it doesn't go on rail right or things like that, you know.
It makes me worried that people will write off a design, you know, like something that is designed perfectly, they're not going to give it a week to suss it out.
Yeah, that's why I think I always tell people, you know, if call me, you know, everything can be fixed. And I mean, our boards, you have to write our fins, you know. So our fins, are the AB1s especially, are really small. They look like a Grom fin, you know, so... But they're purely for the channel bottoms. If you put a normal set of, you know, G3s or something in, but there's too much fin there. So what happens is you overfin the board, so the board just tracks and stuff. So, I mean, a good friend of mine, really good surfer from Lennox, he said to me, I did him up a board was a great board, you know. And he rang me, nah, doesn't go. And he'd been riding Losts forever, you know. And anyway, I went, I know that board goes good, you know, because he's my size. And anyway, he sent me a photo of it, and it had some loss with like a mayhem fin in it or something. And I just went, dude, I gave you a set of AB1s. And he's like, oh, but they're not my favourite fin, you know, my fin. I went, just go try it with the AB1s. And rings me the next day, goes, oh, my God, that thing's magic. I went, dude, you should know better. Getting back to that, anything can be fixed within reason. Like, you know, edges, Al taught me that years ago on a board I'd shaped, and I just said, no, it doesn't feel right, you know. And he looked at it, and he took about eighth of an inch off the top of the fin, pulled the edge back about an inch, and got on it. I was like, oh, what? No, that can't be right, you know. And then from that day on, it's like how important are edges and fins. So it's a lesson that as a shaper and sander and glasser, everything is so important, you know. And so it's – and things can be fixed. So that's why talk to your shaper, you know, because shapers, you know, so often you hear when a board doesn't go – you know, you go, oh, this stuff, or it broke. You know, that's the worst thing. You always, whenever a board breaks, I get a photo, you know. And to me, I make the highest quality, all the best materials, everything, and boards break, you know. And your heart sinks, you know. You just go, oh, God, what happened? Oh, a pin dropped off a 10-foot wave onto the board. Of course they're going to break, you know, but they're not sending you to, like, rub it in your face. But so those guys that get on and the board's magic, yeah, you hear from some, but a lot of boards go out there that you just wonder how that board went, you know, and then later they come back and order board, oh, that's the best board of my life. It's like, oh, my God. she told me, you know, because do think about it. Like every board that goes out my door, I think about that board as, you know, as a shaper, you know, any shaper will tell you, you worry about boards, you know, and no matter how long you've been doing it, you always go back to it and feel it. And especially if it's someone that's a good surfer, or you want them to enjoy the board, you're like,
I'm glad to hear that, because I don't want to bother the shaper. I figure everybody's bothering them. And I figure a lot of people are bothering them without even ordering boards. You know, they're just calling to, like, pick their brain about stuff that they're thinking about buying and they never ultimately do. So I don't want to be the guy who's hounding them, but I'm glad to hear you say that.
I think if you bought a board and the guy shaped the board, he wants to hear, you're right about, I call them tire kickers, you know, and it's, they'll be buying another board. I'm pretty good. I always try and steer guys in the right direction, or even to the, it's like guys that will come to me with a DHD or something. So, can you copy that? It's like, he's in Burley, mate. Well, I'm not copying that.
Go get it.
Yeah, he's up the road. And, always talk to your shaper, you know.
When you're hiring for a small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role, and there's no faster or effective way than through LinkedIn Jobs. Your time and capital are precious, and there is a powerful resource that can help you focus on what you're good at and integrate people into your team seamlessly to help grow your business. LinkedIn Jobs has created the tools to find the right professionals for your team efficiently and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. Everyone is already on LinkedIn with their resumes and references, and now LinkedIn has designed a hiring platform to connect you with candidates specifically qualified for the job that you post about. More than a billion professionals meticulously organized to connect people by skill set to help us all advance our position. 2.5 million businesses already use LinkedIn for hiring, and 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. It's that fast, easy to use, and effective. LinkedIn Jobs can help you write job descriptions, filter the right person to you, and give you the tools to help you interview them like a pro. LinkedInJobs.com/surf is where you go to post your job for free. Yes, totally free. That's linkedinjobs.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Well, a couple of things. You said that your buddy at Lennox should have known better. I find that people who actually surf pretty well and have a lot of information actually get in their own way. You know, they don't rely on the shaper so much. Yeah. They just think they know, so they're going to put the fins in that they think they know is going to work. But that eliminates all opportunity for magic to happen when you're trying to impose your will on it.
Definitely.
So I think it's important that you did say that to remind people that it's like, no. Long-term relationship with a shaper where you're kind of constantly communicating and getting that feedback is not only beneficial for you, but it's actually beneficial for the shaper too, because the shaper is aggregating all of that information with all the other surfers that they're communicating with.
Exactly. And it's just on that fin thing. I'm very hard going part accepting boards being sold without fins, you know, so that's sort of how it is now, going to a shop and you buy your board there and go over there and buy your fins. It's like, and the shape has no say in what's happening to that board, you know. And
it could be such a mismatch.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
I see it quite often. And that's the bit that I still can't get. Every board that, except if someone has already got our fins, and not even our channel bottoms, but our concaves and that, it's, you get a set of fins because I know those fins work in that board. You know, if you go out, try a different set and it works, all good, you know, but I want that say when you walk out the door to say, I know that board's going to work with those fins, you know, and if it doesn't, we can go to a bigger set or something, we can work it out, you know. But that's how I still can't accept it, that shops sell boards without fins. Sorry, that the shaper has no say in what fins that board's getting.
Yeah. The other detail about what you were saying that's worth discussing, you said with your experience riding the channel bottom that you once you kind of let the board do its thing, like you were trying to impose your will on the board, and then once you let it kind of find its way, then it clicked. Mm. And I found that the best designs that I've ever ridden, not the best boards necessarily, but like it's a different style, like a different design feature that I'm not familiar with, I'll get on the board and I'll try to rip. You know, I'll try to do what I know, what I think I can do it when I'm at my key, like top performance, and the board just doesn't go. Yeah. And so sometimes on a new board, I won't do that. Sometimes I'll get on a new board, and because it's new, I'm kind of letting it show me its way, and it'll find whether it's trim or just kind of find a like arcing bottom turn. Ultimately, that's the best sensation in surfing. Yeah. I'll usually in the future go ahead and impose my will on it and have lesser quality experiences just because that's my default to try to do that. But the design is designed with the wave in mind. It's designed to fit contours in the wave. And so if you kind of just let it do its thing and you're neutral, that's going to be the best experience.
Yeah. And that's 100%. That's exactly it. And me, young and naive, would have been going, oh, I'm ripping. I'm out surfing with AB. I'll show him I can rip.
Yeah.
And just cooped it. You know?
Yep. So. All the time.
Yeah.
So let's get into channel bottoms. What's the philosophy? What's the design theory?
The main theory would be it's channeling water, you know, so because it's speed and hold, you know, so essentially, so you'll, you know, like a concave, you can come off the bottom and it can drift that little bit. That it just, channels just don't do that. So you can put them hard rail and they just go, oh, and they'll point you in the other direction, you know. And so that's the hold and the speed in the barrel and things like that. So you'll be in a barrel and the thing will just get you out of it, you know, with, you can have your eyes shut, there's water everywhere, and bang, you'll come out. And the best thing about them is just the direct, the water getting pushed out the back. They're sort of, if you stand on the tail, which is sort of the opposite to most boards, if you're in the barrel, you'll get forward on the board, but these really, you put your weight on your back foot and it just squirts you out, you know. So that's the, essentially it's directing water from the, because in the main bottom design, it has a V, then a concave into a double concave into a V channeled, a channeled V. So at the start, the water gets under your front foot and then pushes it either side of the V and throughout out the channels. And I mean, most of our boards have double or triple flyers, so that just helps release the water out the sides as well. And ideally the best tail is a swallow, and that's frees the board up. It's all about loosening the board up as much as you can. So our boards are over rocked, you know, they're quite a bit pulled in and curvy in the tail with the with the flyers. And so that, or if you didn't have your channels in, the board would be like just loose and going around in circles basically. So as soon as you put, you know, centimeter deep channels through it, you know, the it just straightens everything, pushes all the water out the back.
So to start at the beginning for listeners, the idea with a lot of designs, there's obviously you want to go fast and you want to be able to turn. So if you have flat rocker in a board, you're able to go fast because if there's rocker, it's going to be pushing water. If you're going straight, but once you get the board on rail, that rocker is now sideways and in the water, so there's a tighter turning radius with more rocker. Yeah. So the speed, flatter rocker will let you go fast, more rocker will help you turn, But what you're saying is the channel bottoms are adding a lot of speed to the board, so you can actually add more rocker.
Yeah.
And get both the best of both worlds, basically. Yeah, faster so and tighter.
If you look at one of our boards from the side, it looks over rockered, but if you look down nose to tail, the rocker's quite flat because you're looking down the channel. So essentially, even if you do a really deep concave and you start off with an over-rocked board and then put the concave in and it flattens that rocker. So when the board's on its rail, the rail is curved still, so it's still loose. But when it's flat, it's the flat's rocker. So as soon as the board goes on the on its rail, you've got that curve to make it turn. And then when you go back onto it's flat, so you take off again. You
know? Got it.
Same theory in a concave, really.
Sure.
But
how did we arrive at six channels?
Yeah, it's still the ongoing debate. Is for us personally, it's the optimum. It's easiest to manufacture. They look the best. They do everything you need. A four channel works quite well. You know, it's just if anything, they're a little bit more forgiving, I'd say. And the 8 and the 10 are great in single fins and stuff like that, because they got more bite, you know. So not as good for turning, but like in a single fin, it just adds drive. So, you know, the Colesmith 10 channel was, you know, probably the ultimate, you know, board, single fin, just for, you know, it looks so good. And,
yeah.
You know. But as for production and everything else, really, the six channel, you can't go past it, really.
It's the most kind of universal.
Yeah.
Universally applicable. Are there any board designs that channels wouldn't benefit?
Won't benefit?
Yeah. Single fins, twin fins, tri, long board, short board.
I would say a quad, but the guys riding the quads love them.
Really?
You know, it's... To me, they work in everything, but I personally, I don't like them in with a quad setup. I find that just too, the turning's just a bit funny, but I always get told from the guys who've ridden them as quads, you're not using them enough, which is probably my fault too, is because I'm a thruster guy. I'll use it for a week as a quad and just go, nah, get it, that turns like a thruster, you know, so... But really, like as a single fin, they're the best. You've got to have channels in a single fin, you know, because it just adds drive. It's the same with the 20, you know. As a twin fin, the channels just add drive, so you get that twin fin feel, but you've still got drive. And, yeah, really, I mean, everything I do has the channels in it, really. Like, I can't... Even the mouths, and I'll do guys' mouths with channels, and they love them. So, and really I'd say, okay, a mail, it wouldn't go. Saying that actually, anything that we don't put channels in any of our big guns, you know, so anything over 8.6, we don't put, unless someone has requested a channel in a 9.6 or something, but all those big guns, always V-bottoms.
Why?
Just there's too much happening, you know, so you don't want to complicate things if, you know, on a 20-foot wave and, you know, it does... cavitate or something gets too much water movement because you do going so fast, so it's purely for safety and stuff like that because of that sweet spot. If you get up, you know, like I don't surf Mavericks or anything, but I imagine if you got up at Mavericks and you know how steep it is and you've slid sort of the front of your board kind of thing, the channels aren't in the water and stuff, it's just defeating the purpose of, you know, that's where everything's always a big V in it, you know, so that's what we've found with the guns, it's safety first.
You probably don't need more speed anyway.
Exactly, you know, exactly, and that's where we've found the 8.6s, that's, to put it, it's about the optimum. Guys will surf 8.6s at big cloud break and stuff like that, and it works, you know, because it's still a barrel, you know, guys are still getting barrel, but yeah. You know, guys are, we were, you know, if it was a single fin, if it was a 9.6 single fin, for Waimea or something. Yeah, it could have channels.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are there any deficits to the design?
I'm too biased to say, like you were saying before, someone's going, oh, too hard to make. Sanders glasses, hate them, you know. And but to me, the performance outweighs all that, you know. And so, yeah, I can't. Yeah, I'm too biased to. I can't. Realistically, they, if anything, they probably can get damaged, you know, just because there's so many bits to them. So if a leg rope gets caught around your fin and, you know, can crack a fly or things. But stuff happens to every other surfboard too, you know.
So. I've been worried with mine in the trunk right now. Every time I go to close the trunk, I'm, like, very aware that it's there because I don't want to crush it.
You know? Yeah. Oh, it's like having a good pair of sunnies, though. You know, yeah. You're not going to walk around and go to the pub with them or, you know, sit on a $500 pair of sunnies, are you? You know, so that's how I find our boards, they get treated pretty well, you know.
I've seen a few, I don't think they've been your guys' boards, but I've seen a few where there's like a step in the channel. Any thoughts on that? Have you guys been doing that? And what's the idea behind
it? I glassed one the other day for Ian Byrne, who's Ellen's brother, and I seem to glass everybody's channel bottoms. And but he, I think Tommy Peterson was that was his fireball.
That's what it was. Yeah, that's exactly what it was. Yeah, yeah.
People like them.
What's the idea? What does it do?
I honestly can't speak on other people's designs, but my theory of what they're doing is they're loosening that board, like we're saying about having a channel bottom and loosening it up. So what I think they're thinking is it's letting the water out the tail, and as you're turning on a normal tail, so it's going to be pretty loose right on its tail. So, and then when you go back to flats, you're engaging the channels again. So that's my theory.
It's releasing the water off the first step, yes, basically. Yes. So sooner.
Yeah. And they look great, you know, like, and most things that look good go good, you know, or you can work them out to go good. And I was speaking to Ern about it when I glassed it, and I said, you know, how'd they go? You know, and he goes, yeah, the guy loves it. So, and that was his first one that he had done too. So, and that, you know, it's, I'm sure they'd be great in small waves and that too, you know, just like beaches out here, you know.
Yeah. So you started working with channels in 1995-ish, so over 20 years ago?
Yeah.
24 years ago?
Yeah.
Are you surprised that they're not embraced more wholly? Like, there's not guys on tour riding channel bottoms.
Yeah. I think it's about production, you know?
Really, though. I mean, like, the guys going for world titles, they'll pay a premium. They don't care what production is. Like, they will want, they want the best quality material.
Yeah, it's a hard one. I think, if you're at JBA, why wouldn't you have a six channel? Kira here, why wouldn't you be pulling out your six channel? But I think it gets back to that, as for the pro surfers, they're so tuned to their board, that favourite board that there is their go-to board. If they mix it up too much, I think it will just play with their head, you know, mentally, to not be able to switch between boards. Because I think if someone was on channels on the tour, they'd have to be 100% on channels, you know.
Yeah.
But back in the day, you know, there's Archie and Matt Hoy, you know, they all... they were pretty solid channel riders, you know, and they did all right.
Yeah.
Rick Smith, who's Cole Smith's son, he did the QS for, you know, quite a while, and he ripped. And I think as Slater said to him at JBA, he's like, you were the standout. And really? That was purely just the speed and the turns he was doing on the six channel. And he only rode six channels, but he's too nice to be on the pro tour. Didn't have that competitive spirit, you know.
Yeah, I do. I think Archie and Hoy are great examples. They were kind of the end of an era where people actually experimented with board design on tour. Before them, I mean, you saw a lot of far out there stuff of people doing very different type of surfing. And now all the surfing we see on tour is so homogenized.
And that's where it's like I go into a surf shop now and just I look at the boards and it does nothing for me.
Really?
Just like pick them up. I appreciate the work that's gone into making them and that, but just you pick them up and they're just all the same, you know, and that can't be good, you know. I think personally pro surfers should make boards just to have a go, spend time in the factory to get an idea on surf design, because a lot of the pros, you know, just who I've met through the years, they are very picky on their boards, and you know, you hear stories of guys will go in with 20 boards and take one, you know, as a shaper, I'd be heartbroken, you know, to go, just made you 20 boards and you picked one, and you just by putting it under your arm.
Well, the reality is they are that attuned, I think. A lot of guys are at that level anyways. They know the one that's going to work for them, but it's for the style of surfing that they're trying to do, which again is this super narrow focused thing.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
But even when you see guys, like I remember seeing Stewie Kennedy riding one of the Tomos in the US Open years ago with like the flat nose, the weird looking kind of planing hole ones. And the judges underscored him drastically. And I think it was strictly to do with the board just aesthetically. When you're watching him surf on a wave, it just doesn't look the same as everything else that I'm used to seeing. And the judges trying to do their job is difficult, and they're trying to fit a square peg almost into this round hole, and they don't know how to do it, and it just comes out as a 5.5 ride instead of what should have been an 8 if he had a pointy nose, you know?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And that's if I was a pro, I'd be doing the same. It's like that's the judging criteria. I've got to meet that, and old mate's doing a 360 year, I have to do it, you know, so.
The problem, though, is the vast majority of people watching that pro tour think that they're going to be able to surf like that if they go get a board like that. And the reality is 90% of the world should be riding a mid-length with tons of foam, you know.
Exactly, and that's 100%. And that's, we're lucky with our business, it's our clientele know. They know exactly what they want, and it's all about getting barreled, and it's not about doing turns. Yeah, it's about doing turns and that, but it's about going fast and stuff like that. It's not, it's being realistic to yourself, you know. It's like, I mean, I am, you know, it's, you can't, it's like we're saying, I've got to go out and rip. It's like, as soon as you try and rip, you know, you're doing far from it.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. You said you were building 10 boards a week with AB. How many are you up to now?
I try and do 5 of my own brand, and then of Burning Spears, and then, you know, Old Glass, maybe 3 other, like Mount Woodgies or Jamie Burns, do Dalbergs and Thornton Fallanders, just all the channels, you know. So always try and do, so I try and do sort of 5 to 8, you know, which is a big week, you know, all channels, you know, I'm doing everything, you know. And I do have a couple of mates that are contractors that I'll just call up and say, hey, I need to, it's funny today where Burley Brewing are doing a like an exhibition to handmade boards and guys to showcase guys like us. And I've been on the phone just trying to organise all the boys, just try and get the boards shaped so we can give them glass and spray, because it's a night. The next 2 weeks is going to be up to the 10, 12 a week, you know, so. And all high-end, all because they are showpieces, so they'll be polished. And so I'm actually dreading the next few weeks.
Do you ever envision a machine building or a CNC machine cutting and shaping channel bottoms?
Well, they say they can do it.
I think they can,
And
there's a machine that can do it.
And to me, I'd spend more time trying to get that machine to do what I wanted that it would take me to. I mean, yeah, it's... If you definitely going to be there.
If you were making 50 of the same exact boards, yes. Maybe.
Yes, exactly.
But you're not.
No, everything's different. And that's because I was talking to one of the guys who had the machine. We can do it. I'll bring you a demo of one. Yeah, sweet, bring it down. Never turned up. And but I was trying to explain to them that every channel is different. So if you have a board that's 18, if it's 6.5, 18.5, those channel widths are going to be different to a board that's 19 or even 18.75. It's going to be an eighth of an inch different each channel. So if you're, and, you know, at the moment, the machine, you know, we use a computer to pre-cut boards and they're great, but they're never perfect. You always have to true them within, sometimes it's a millimetre, sometimes it's 3 mil. But with the channel, if you're 3 mil out in the tail, well, that's visually you can see it. So on a flatty or a connie, you can basically go, oh, yeah, that's sweet, I'll just draw the tail template in and the board might be out an eighth of an inch, but you won't notice. And most of us wouldn't notice, but on a channel, that you just can't do that. So if the outline's doing that, if a machine's going into shape channels, everything would be just, it'd end up a circus, you know.
So that's a good point.
In the future, it will definitely be there, I guarantee it, you know, and hopefully the best thing will be a sanding machine or a glassing machine, but I can't see. I heard a rumour there was one in China, but, you know, a glassing machine, but who knows.
I mean, the reality is there are machines and robots doing far more technical work than that, but it's for industries where the volume is significantly higher and it's profitable to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
yeah.
Surf industry just isn't.
No,
exactly. So they're not going to design a machine to glass 8 boards a week.
Yeah, exactly. You know? And that's exactly it. And I can't, people say, oh, you should buy a computer machine. It's, I'm not outlaying $80,000 for something. It would never pay itself off, you know? Especially I can hand shape, so... No, and there's machines all around the Gold Coast. It's like, I'd love one just to learn it because I always try and stay up to date with, you know, technology. But you couldn't. I can't justify outlaying. It's hard justifying paying $800 for a sander, you know, and that's your workhorse, you know. So
that's funny.
Yeah.
Are there any other board designs that you're excited about seeing right now? I just was up hanging out with Andrew Kidman the other day, and he's got this new film out called On the Edge of the Dream, featuring the George Greeno edge design. So that's fresh in my mind as something that's like so radically mind-opening and altering that I'm not quite ready to address it, you know? But are there any other board designs that you're looking at right now that are really intriguing?
I reckon that the one thing I was intrigued by was that the fireball or the step channel, if, whatever they called it, that one is what gets me thinking, you know. I see it and always, that's probably the one I've just been, because I'm in channels, you know, and really in design, not really, but in what guys are doing with tints and stuff like that, that's sort of what I'm amazed by at the moment. It's like, that's the best thing about Instagram and stuff. You get see what everybody's doing around the world and you're like, wow, well, that's cool, you know, I might try that. So for me, I think social media will lift our industry quite a bit in the quality of boards and different stuff that's coming out. You see it around here now, you know. This, you know, 10 years ago, this was the 6.2, 18.5, 2.25, you know, town. You know, everybody had the same board, you know. Now, not many people have that high performance board, you know. Yeah, they're around, but you know, there's everything around now, you know.
Good.
Which is, it's good because guys learn, you know, and that's the biggest thing about surfboards. If you ride different stuff, you learn, you know.
Yeah.
So it's and it's just good for you. It's good for your surfing. You're buying boards, keeping people in jobs, you know. Yeah. It's good. You know?
Jamie is Alan's son.
Yep.
Is he taking over some shaping responsibilities at the factory?
He does a bit. He has his own label, JB. he's always, he, since his a kid, grew up in the factory, you know. He's, you know, the main shaper at JS, so he's doing great out there. And when AB passed, we're in this sort of crossroads, and we just sort of carried on as we were. And as I think time goes on, Jamie will get more involved in burning spears. And to me, it's great to have Jamie, because I'm so sort of narrow-minded into channel bottoms, and this is it, you know. But he does all the new stuff, you know, because it's coming from JS, you know, he's doing all the new. So as a team, you know, we're great, you know, so we have those, the different board types, you know, and he great at channels too, you know. He's a great channel shaper. I mean, grew up in our factory, you know, so how could you not, you know.
How often do you ride other people's surfboards?
Probably not enough. I do ride them. Like, if I'm surfing with a guy, I'm always will be keen. And, I think I always sort of, oh, that's a bit funny. And the one I'd never ridden an epoxy a while ago and never ridden one, you know, it's just like, because they're just too, I've shaped a couple, you know, channel bottom epoxies, and they're so hard to make, it's, you know, it's just not worth doing them. So I'd never ridden an epoxy, and I was like, oh, it's like 2 foot out here. It's like, you know, give us that board, you know, it's the mat at the factory, and I just had a ball on it.
Really?
You know, and it was I think it had a big, it was like a stinger. It had a big flyer, you know, it was a kind of bizarre looking thing. So if that good, I felt so good on doing all these turns. He even sold one to a guy out there, you know. So he goes, what's that? And just as a friend, you know. And I showed him the board. He goes, oh, so he goes and buys one of his, you know. Jesus.
Amazing.
But so it's, and that's where I say I don't think I surf enough of other people's designs to open my mind a bit about other boards, you know, and other technologies, you know. So, because we are very, or I am very, you know, PU. Stringer, you know, just change the stringer as the ball gets bigger, you know, channel bottom, you know.
Yeah.
So
if you could get one board from anybody, what would you get?
Oh, yeah, that's a hard one. You know what, I'd like to try like Greg Weber's new one, you know, the concave deck,
yeah,
thing.
I think it's freaky
just,
looking.
Yeah, just to, you know, I watched this thing and he was talking about it, and I was like, yeah, that sort of makes sense, you know. So
he has a way of making things sound they make sense.
Yeah,
but I'm not convinced all the time.
That's, I think, the main reason I'd like to try it, just to go, one, I just want to feel it under my feet to see what that would be like, because, you know, we've all played with single concave decks, you know, so over the years, so, and no one really, I mean, that's what your board ends up like, so no one would go, oh, I'll just shape that in straight away, you know. And so that one, or I think, you know, like a Firewire, like a Tomo or something, because I haven't ridden any of those designs, you know, so just to see, know, how those technologies are going. I'm more interested in the technologies rather than the design of the board, okay. You know, so only so I can relate it back to my board, you know, so, and just trying different technologies. But like I say, I'm very narrow-minded, and, you know, this is how a rocker should look, and, you know.
I mean, you kind of, there's so many variables and there's so many different things that it's impossible to do it all, you know? Yeah. And once you kind of chase a rabbit hole, you can still explore that infinitely. And so it's hard to...
Well, that's the thing. It's like, I haven't finished with my own boards, you know? Like, and that's exactly it, you know? And like, I just recently made a board for myself and I thought, oh, this is going to be insane. Just went a bit wider in the nose, wider in the tail, wider there. Oh, yeah, it's going to be insane. Worst thing I've ever done, you know, and I just went, well, there you go, you know, I should know better, you know, and
that's funny.
But you got to do it to, you realise, oh, yeah, I basically made a board that was just for a guy that's 75 or 80 kilo, you know, rather than my my 68 kilo. You
know? Sure. Is there anybody you'd like to see ride your boards?
I'd like to see one in the wave pool, in Slater's wave pool. That'd be to me, that's probably the ultimate wave to try our boards out in, you know, just because the way it looks like that barrel section is actually quite, it's harder than it looks, you know, and for us, sort of mere mortals, but the, that's where I think, but as surfers go, you know, I think we've always had really high end guys surfing that, our design, and they all love it, and so really, I mean, I'd always, you know, any surfer I get a buzz out seeing, you know, if I see one of our boards down here, you know, a guy gets the hail barrel through here, you just say, yeah. No matter, really, like, at the end of the day, it's, you know, if you're riding it, I'm going to be just as stoked as, you know, if Slater's riding it, you know, or, yeah.
It's good to hear. I did surf Slater's wave pool, by the way.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, and I ate it. I was allocated two rights, and I ate it on both of them in the barrel. Oh, so man. It is hard. Yeah, it's not as easy as you would think.
Yeah, it just looks it, and that's where, you know, I just go, because our boards are so easy in the barrel that that's where you just stand and it just, you'd be out, you know, and that's where I just go, that's the ultimate, you know, and that's where I, you know, to me, I think you'd probably best ride in epoxies and that, you know, and I'd just flotation, you know, and so, you know, we built the Scardy a 5.9 epoxy channel, and I was just like, oh, this is the ultimate board for that pool, you know, five little short channel bottom, you know.
Yeah, I just cooked it. It wasn't my board's fault. It wasn't the wave's fault. It was just you're so nervous is what it is.
Yeah,
You're just like.
You got two chances.
That was the problem. Yeah. So the first one, I was afraid I wouldn't even catch the wave, first of all, you know?
Yeah.
They start counting down. Everybody's watching. The train starts coming and you have those thoughts.
Yeah,
you're like, I might not catch the wave. Cause I remember seeing a clip of Martin Potter missing a wave in the pool. And I'm like, if Potts can miss I can miss it. And then I got it. I caught the wave. I'm like, okay, step one, check, got up. Like, all right. Didn't fall. Like just kind of casually did like a safety check turn. Felt okay. And then I could see it start to double up. So came out of the check turn and like pulled in. And just in the barrel, midway through the barrel, like my outside rail caught and I just went down. I thought to myself, okay, that wasn't as bad. That was easier than I expected. Shake off the nerves. I'm fine. All right. The next wave, I'm just going to get shacked on and it's going to be epic. The problem was that 1 hour session in the pool, you're only allocated one right and one left. So I didn't have another right in that session. Then I get out of the pool. Watch two other sessions go by for 2 hours. Then we have lunch. Then we come back. Now it's 4 hours later by the time the next ride is coming. And it was like all the nerves had built up again over the course of the 4 hours. So in the ocean, you can shake that experience off real quick and then get a little wave while you're paddling out, like loosen up, then wait for the set wave and reset and go. Yeah. This, it was just pure nerves, you know?
I'd be hopeless, you know?
It's tough.
It's like here... If you're surfing snapper, you know, it's the same kind of thing. You'll wait out there for an hour, but then you're like, oh, this is my chance. Everything, and you go over the falls.
Yeah.
You know, I just waited. That was my wave, you know, and then, so you just.
And everybody's looking.
Yeah.
As you're paddling in, you see all these eyeballs. So what's funny, John, I just saw today on Instagram, he rented out Slater's pool for 9 days and he and his coach Ross Williams and they're all there training for snapper.
Yeah, there you go.
How's that? Yeah.
Well, to me, that's snapper. You know, when you look at it, it's out here. Perfect example. And that's, Slater would have built that for training. You know, he wasn't thinking about us going there to rent it out. You know?
No. But I mean, it's crazy to think that we're at a day and age where John and his crew can rent it for 9 days in preparation for this event.
Yeah. And we, a mate went there. he went there and he was outside and there's filming it on top of an RV. Cops came, moved them on. And then, so he's come back here and he's rung me and he's gone, right, so we're going to, I've done the math, you know, we can rent this place out, you know, if there's 10 of us, it's going to cost us, you know, if by the time we do, if that's about 10 grand each. And I'm like, for a day? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, you know how many surf trips you can get for 10 grand?
I know.
You know? And he's like, no, but you should see this wave. I'm like,
yeah. So sorry. It's $500 a wave, you know, like put it that way. And it sounds insane.
Yeah, yeah. Nah. And that's the thing. It's, I'd like to experience it though.
Yeah. It's pretty surreal. I mean, despite me falling, and I drove home the next day just needing to stop in Santa Barbara and surf just to get the jitters out of my system. I had all that latent energy. But despite all of that, it was still radical. It was like going to Disneyland when you're a kid. That's the feeling that it was. It was just pure excitement.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's, you know, people go, oh, it's not the ocean. It's like, but still.
Yeah.
Look, if you rocked up there and you saw that thing, you'd be a kid in a candy store. You know?
Like,
yeah.
And I'm not foregoing the ocean.
Yeah.
I'm still going to use the ocean.
Exactly. And that's, I mean, it was always the debate, but, you know, out here it's always, it's like that last swell, you know, it's, you're watching guys get the waves of their life and, you know, you'll get, there'll be one wave that stands out over that whole weekend that one guy got and you're like, a pool can't replicate that, you know, I've just, oh, did you see that thing? If it's on social media or something, and you're just like, oh yeah, look at that, you know?
Well, that's the exact detail is not knowing it's coming, not knowing who's going to get it, not knowing who's going to battle for positioning.
Yeah.
That's
exciting. And that is exciting. We don't sit out there for 3 hours and, you know, to purely surf. It's about what's coming next, you know. Well, I make this, you know, and that's why we surf.
What was the best wave that you saw from that run?
That one, well, the one I was describing was a guy, Clarkie, I think it was his name. He's a Burley boy and it was in Burley and the thing just spat on. It looked like backdoor. The thing was just insane. And, yeah, it was just one of the most crazy waves I've ever seen Burley do. You know, just the way, I swear to God, it looked like backdoor. It was just standing there and the thing spat so much water. And that's what Ern was out at the time and he said the things were breathing. He was on the jet ski and he's just going, the things were breathing. And it was the peak of that, it was that sad day arvo.
And somebody got it on video?
Yeah.
So he was able to see it.
Yeah, if you go on Burley Board Riders, they just hammered it, you know. And it's, I think, I forget the guy's name, but I'm sure it's Clarkie. It's like tag something. And
good for him.
You can't miss it, you know. You're just like, oh, shit. You know, you watch Kerry and everybody's getting barreled in that, but that was one of those waves you're just like, oh.
Yeah.
You know.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Final question for everybody interviewed is, what was the last surfboard that you rode?
My last one was my 6.5, which actually proved to me, I have my 6.5 as my step up, you know, and it's 8 1/4, 2 1/4, you know. And so I was talking about that board I made wider and stuff, and I got on that 6.5 and just went, it's the thing turned that well. Yeah, the wave had more, you know, push and stuff through that swell, and then... And I got on it, just went, width is everything, you know. And it just showed me, because I, you know, I'm a lightweight, so I surf between 8 1/4 to 8 1/2. And it doesn't matter how long the thing is, you know. And so I jumped on that and just doing these turns, and I just go, oh, throw the other one. Well, it's actually going to go up for sale very soon. I was looking at it today. I had it on my arm going, you're kidding yourself, you know. So... I think I'm just in that mentality as I get older, I should go wider and thicker. And Scardy did it. That's David Scard. He did it recently. He was going wider, you know, and he's like 80 kilo. And we've always ridden the same ball. It's 8 1/4, 2 1/4. It's what AB rode, 8 1/4, 2 1/4. And he's gone back to 8 1/4, 2 1/4. I'm going, dude, you're 80 kilos. You're in the mines, like. Guy's charging, really? You know, and just he's going, it's the best dimensions, you know. And so if you, like, he's a freak, you know, he's one of those guys that, you know, will, he'll be 10 foot and he'll be out on his 6-0, you know, and just getting barreled and loving it, you know. And so I don't think he minds that paddle, being a harder paddle, but yeah, so, but yeah, that last board and was 6.5, 8.25, 2.25, 6 channel. You know.
During the cyclone?
Just before it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's just out at the alley. The alley's got this bank at Lacey's. It's been that perfect for months. Mm-hmm. So it's just one of those days out there that, you know, just love it.
Yeah. So. Awesome. Well, thank you.
No worries.
Special thanks to Jake Holloway at Shapers Manufacturing Co. for making this episode possible. You can follow Dale Wilson on Instagram at WilsonJet. I've linked to his work on our Instagram at Surf Splendor, and of course on our website, surfsplendorpodcast.com, where you can also visit our donation page to support this show via PayPal or Venmo. Any donation received in the month of September will get you an entry to win that Pat Rawson shortboard, which he'll custom make for you. This giveaway is sponsored by SPY, so use our promo code, which is the word podcast, on spyoptic.com, and you'll earn a second entry in that board giveaway, so that doubles your chances. And then, of course, you just get a premium quality pair of shades or snow goggles. It is a win-win. Spyoptic.com, promo code podcast. And that is through September 30th. The winner will be randomly selected on October 1st, and I will publish that on Instagram. Also, if you're so inclined, rate and review this show in whatever podcast app you use. That helps strangers to find it, which helps our show grow, which helps us attract guests to sit down for an hour to chat. So thanks for all your help with that. I'm glad to play my role and create all the content with your support. So thank you. All right, this is David Scales. I'll be back on Friday with Chaz Smith for another episode of The Grit, and then I'll be back here on Wednesday for Surf Splendor. Until then, get back into the ocean, share some waves, and shred on.